Let me say, how many interviews did you do out of the 600?
I'd probably say about 10.
Okay.
When the CTO called me and he was like, hey, you applied to this thing. And I was like, what are you talking about? Because, you know, I'm at like a few hundred applications. I don't remember. So I like literally put him on mute and I opened my email. I was like, what was this position? And I was like, oh, okay. And then he just asked me, like, what are the protocols involved in a Google search? So, okay, I was like, TCP IP model and OSI model. So I'm talking about these different protocols. I'm like, yeah, something about DNS. I was just, like, brain dumping, you know? And he was like, okay, yeah, cool. All right, we'll get back to you. And he called me back the next day, and he was like, all right, yeah, we're going to give you the job. This is what we're going to pay you. And I was like, no. I was like, what?
This video will be sponsored by SNHU. So it's 2025 and cybersecurity is still all the rage. Breaches are at an all-time high and so are cyber salaries. But there's a problem you keep running into. Cyber jobs you want to land are requiring a degree and you don't have one. Let me introduce you to today's sponsor, Southern New Hampshire University, SNHU. SNHU has a flexible online program that also touts one of the lowest tuitions in the country. SNHU is an affordable, accredited, nonprofit university that has dedicated career advisors, webinars, internships, and more to prepare you to enter or advance in the workforce. There's a 32% projected growth of information security analyst roles through 2032, and according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the median security analyst salary in 2023 was $120,000. In SNHU's program, you can learn about these critical subjects: cybersecurity foundations, networking, incident response, risk management, enterprise security, and more. As a cybersecurity professional, these are all important courses. If you would like to know more about SNHU's program, then please visit snhu.edu/textual or click the link below in the description.
Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD. We got a special guest for y'all today. None other than the lovely Fanta Marie.
Hi.
You might have seen her on TikTok and CompTIA's website and all this other stuff she's been doing, but this is the collaboration y'all didn't think y'all need, but y'all got it. But if you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to your podcast at, do me a favor, follow the podcast, leave us a comment or a review, share it out for the podcast algorithm. And if you're on YouTube, just hit the like button. That's all you got to do. And if you really like us, subscribe. You know, it means a lot to me. And if one more thing, and I'm going to let y'all go. Subscribe to the Patreon. Only $2 to join. The highest tier thing is like $30. You get a lot of things. And you can join the Discord and you can rock out with us. But we've been talking a little while. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm nervous. I'm excited. But I'm good. Even, you know.
Yeah, I've been easing her down.
Yeah. I'm much more comfortable now than I was like 10 minutes ago.
I told you. This is, look, we're just having a conversation. So for the people who don't know who you are.
Yeah.
Let me do like the recruiter. Can you tell me about yourself?
Oh, yeah. So my name is Fanta Marie. I'm 25, and I've been working in cybersecurity almost 3 years now. I'm currently a consultant, but I make TikToks and YouTubes. I just really like creating exposure into the cyber industry. That was primarily kickstarted after I did my MBA in cybersecurity, where I learned a lot about the different domains. And also, I realized that one, there's not a lot of diversity in tech in general, nor cyber. And then two, people don't really even know what cyber fully is. So I like making content surrounding that kind of exposure around the domains and things like that.
Great. Yeah, we definitely know. We'll get into some of that social piece because it opens up so much for you, whether it's work-wise or just personal brand and network-wise. I always tell people to make some type of content. You don't have to be an influencer, but you need to type of brand yourself somewhat so you can actually have some visibility on LinkedIn and get reached out to about certain positions. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm telling clients all the time. Now, I did a little digging, so I listened to your – if you want to, you could put a mic over something too if you want to. Cool. Early career out of high school. Mm-hmm. I did see that you went to West Virginia.
Oh, yeah.
And what did you do? Like, what were you majoring in when you was at West Virginia that first time?
So I studied computer engineering and political science. I wanted to go to law school and be an IP attorney. That was like, I was locked in on that. And towards the middle of, I'd probably say sophomore year, the pandemic hit. So I didn't really have internship opportunities and didn't really get to experience what it was like to be an engineer in the professional field. So I was like, okay, you know, we'll just go to law school. By that point, I was like, I don't think I actually want to necessarily be an engineer, but I have the fundamentals. So, yeah, I mean, when you're like 19, 20, you don't really even know. You think you know, but you don't really know half the time.
Yeah, so I was also looking at your LinkedIn. I saw you was doing social media marketing.
So in college, I was a social media marketing analyst for a company. It was like freelancing, just analyzing ads on Facebook, Google, Instagram to see like what metrics worked and what didn't. So that was helping me pay the bills in college. Like I was making a lot of money doing that on the side.
Okay. No, I asked that because a later question I'm going to ask you is going to be, how's that helped you with TikTok?
Okay. Yeah. So. Yeah. Get into it.
And you know what's funny? I just had a consultation with a guy who's similar experience to you. Went to school, was finished in the pandemic, and couldn't intern anywhere.
Yeah.
And except you did something smart, and what he decided to do ain't working.
Oh, like what?
So it's one of the things, like, he knows we talk about this all the time, and other people talk about it, but the years to finesse to get into cyber are kind of like over.
Mm-hmm.
He knows somebody that has a company. So I said, yeah, he could put that. He worked at my company on his resume. And so mm-hmm. he decided to find a title, which is very a high-level title that I always tell people to be weary of,
mm-hmm.
cybersecurity specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And he found a couple of job descriptions, use AI to generate some bullets.
Mm-hmm.
But he can't get past interviews because he says he even stumbles on, hey, tell me about yourself. What's your day-to-day like? Mm. He was hitting me up, and he had two interviews like this week. I was like, yeah, you're not going to get through these, fam.
Yeah.
There's nothing I could do to prepare you to get through these because you don't have any stories to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I tell people, it's like, now it's getting to the point where, like, okay, Autumn Star met the question they're asking you, whether it's from want to know something about school or project or work. Mm-hmm. If you don't have anything you could tie to that, you're done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, I'm not one to condone lying, but I do think if you're entry level, I think sometimes you might have to bedazzle your resume a little
bedazzling bit. And just straight out just making some stuff up that you can't talk about is too different.
Like, it's crazy
because I'm got clients of my own now to where, like, if they need more experience,
mm-hmm.
I can say you worked with me. I can actually walk you through the things we were put on your resume so you could talk about them indefinitely,
mm-hmm.
versus you just finding some stuff from AI that doesn't give you context of what it means.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the biggest issue. Like, or what I see too is you'll go out and do a boot camp or a course, but you really, the course did not do a good enough explanation of how these parts meet.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a gap right here of why you don't know is that. Like, I still have people, I have these videos, and I was going to message you on one of your videos. You did like your top five. I'm going to message you right now. This is on the podcast. Okay. I decide if I leave it in or out. But you was like your top five. Cyber influencers or something like that.
Uh-huh.
I think something like that. So I was like, I don't know, you got a boyfriend or anything?
No.
Okay. I was just making sure. Like,
single?
No, I was like, low key, this probably her way outside of, like, you and Chris. I said, it's probably her shooting her shot at these guys.
No.
But,
No. I was not shooting my shot. Those are people that they're like my friends. So we talk, like, mm-hmm. when you make TikToks and stuff, and I met them at like conferences.
Yeah.
You know, we talk every now and then, especially when you all make TikToks in the same area. You kind of, you watch each other's stuff. So, yeah, no.
But I have older TikToks where, like, I'm going through. Like, I work on the blue team. And mm-hmm. so I have, like, these scenario questions. And I still get people come through and answer, try to answer them. And I'm like, bro, y'all do not even understand the concept of this role.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all don't even understand how things work. Y'all try to go for the nuke.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not how things work. I can't just simply say, oh, I see Phantom Marie put a bad login today, I'm gonna disable her account. That's mm-hmm. not how this works.
No.
So it's like they'll say something like that, like, oh, if you see alert for this, I say, no, bro. You gotta figure out from the event if an actual incident, so you can make it an investigation, then it turns into an incident. I was like, there's levels to this. But back to us talking about the pandemic and you pretty much finding your way to get into cyber. I was watching your YouTube video because that was like the more concise video that I could stick with to find out where I want to extrapolate from the video. And you were saying like, all right, so you really want to be a lawyer and then you're studying for the LSAT. And I feel like any test with an at in it is like hard for no reason.
It's a litmus test.
Because
we won't get into that, but
years ago, before I moved to Dallas, I was like, I was bored. I was like, I don't know what to do. I'm not feeling challenged at work. Let me go get a master's. And so I think my GPA and stuff wasn't as good as it needed to be to go straight into that school. So I was like, yeah, you got to take the GMAT. And so I was studying for the GMAT, but I was like, bro, this test don't make sense. It could be, it'd be, the question would be like, Billy had five apples. He gave three to Susie, took one back, and now he bought three apples from the grocery store. Billy has close to X amount of apples. He don't have these apples. He could have this amount of apples, but he doesn't have them, or he gave. It'd be stupid. So I was like, bro, I'm not studying for this. I'm done.
Logical reasoning, yeah.
It's not even logical. The questions are made to make you not want to get a master's.
Yeah, it's I think it's a litmus test. They're designed that way for a reason.
So yeah, so after that, I decided, like, when I moved out here, a couple of my friends that we went to undergrad together, they was like, yo, I'm at University of Dallas to get my master's. And because I had work experience, they used that to help me, like, pretty much let me in. So I was like, bet, I'll get my master's here. And it's like one of the best experiences I had in my life with education. But going past, like, did you ever pass the LSATs?
Yeah, so, yeah, I took it. My score was not the best. I think I scored a 157, honestly. My score is actually still valid right now. It's going to expire in like 2 years, but yeah.
Okay, Mike from Suits.
157 is not good at all.
Really?
No.
What you need to get like in law school?
Good score. So it's 120 to 180. So like median is like, You really want to score like a 165. And even a 165 is like low. Most people aim for like 170. Like, but it's really hard. It's really hard. But
I don't think a test is indicative of ability.
No, but that's what I was saying. It's a litmus test. So law school is really like a playground for the rich. You're not a part of them. And like when you think about materials for studying for the LSAT, like courses and stuff like that, you're spending thousands of dollars. Thousands to be prepared to take the exam. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, because, and I, like I said, this is not minimizing a lawyer's job, but I feel like most of their job is research.
Yeah.
Find, going through like words, seeing what words mean, looking up precedents from different cases, putting together, substantiating your claim, and beating the person that's next to you. Yeah. And resources. So if you don't got the resources to beat the other lawyer, you can lose just off of that. You could be more talented, better than them, had an aptitude, but they got more money or more backers, they can get more things that comes from you. And that's not even bringing in the shady stuff that can happen if the judge is bought off and all these different things. That's why I was like,
playground for the rich.
I was like, if I was a lawyer, I'd probably be an ambulance chaser. Or I would be a lawyer that's in GRC, that's looking at like data privacy and
that's what I think about that. If I were to go back in maybe in a couple of years or so, because, you know, it's something I wanted to do for so long.
I think
long.
You can still do it.
Yeah, I would do privacy and ethics or like AI law, cyber law, sit on consulting advisory boards and things like that. Like, I wouldn't necessarily have to be a litigating attorney, but somebody who deeply understands like the space. Because, yeah, it's
for sure.
Research. Because
we still, like, we got incidents, and if we have to say something happened at our company, we involve the legal team.
Exactly. So,
and then we say, you know, it's at our hands now. Y'all figure out what we're going to say and what type of statement we're going to send out to people.
Yep.
So now you take the LSATs and you apply to, I think, what, two colleges?
I applied to DC schools. Yeah, I wanted to stay in the area. So I applied to American, Catholic Law. Howard Law got waitlisted. And I applied too late in the cycle too. I waited until like January. The cycle closes like end of February. So yeah, my chances of getting in were not high at that point. And so when you get waitlisted, it pretty much means like you can be considered if everybody else that they said yes to can't come. And the first year for law school is very small. Like the classes are very, very tiny. So competition is really, really high. So, yeah, I was like, all right, well, I guess this isn't happening right now.
Yeah. So, and so what year was this when you thought about that pivot?
This was 20. Well, I was studying and applying like fall of 2021 and into 2022 is when I, like early 2022 is when I closed the application cycle.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, cool. Yeah, this is... This is still kind of not recent, like, but it's still like 3 years ago.
Yeah,
you was this is bad. Like I had already started making my content and stuff like that. So you should have, but you got it anyway. I was like, well, you could have just hit me up and had a console. I would have had you. Yeah. But so you decide, okay, you know what? I'm gonna do that interesting thing I've been hearing people talk about on social media.
Yeah. So you know, during the pandemic, like I said, I was a sophomore when the pandemic hit. So I graduated in 2021. But you know, we were all locked inside, social distancing and stuff like that. And that's when TikTok really boomed. Like a lot of people were being real funny, exposing a lot of things. So two people that I had seen a lot was one Cyber Queen and Simone Bees. And then also CeCe Coutinho. So I was seeing them on TikTok. I was like, cybersecurity. Even though I had a tech background, computer engineering is like the love child of electrical engineering, is like wiring circuits and chips. And then also like computer science. Like, can you program what you're wiring and things like that? So you don't really touch cyber at all, which is like, I pretty much consider that like IT hygiene. You don't really get into that. So I was still like, what is that? I grew up, one of my favorite shows growing up was Mr. Robot. I loved Mr. Really? Robot. Yeah. So that was my like first exposure into that. So, and like most people, when they hear cybersecurity, they think you're sitting in a dark room with a hoodie on, just click clacking and trying to hack into things. And that's a part of it. It's not all of it, right? So I was stuck and I was like, okay, you know, I just took a big hit, you know, I'll be ready for the fall cycle 2022. I'm going to apply early action, you know, so I could get in, you know, make sure I get in. And, but you know, the way student loans are set up, they don't care about any of that. They don't care that you don't have a job or anything. Because I had put in all my time trying to, you know, study for that. So I was like, okay, we got to do something else. We got to go back to school to avoid paying these loans. So I went back to my alma mater, West Virginia, and they had two online programs. So I was considering data science because AI, yeah, I just wanted to learn more about that. And then the cybersecurity program. So I applied to both, and it was easier to get into the cybersecurity program than the data science one. So I was like, okay, well, we're just gonna do this to avoid paying loans. I really wasn't thinking much about it. And then next thing you know, now I'm here and I love it.
Yeah, I think the thing is when people really start finding out, because a lot of times they say you watch Mr. Robot, but people always think cyber is just one thing. Mm-hmm. Like you said, in the beginning of the episode, all these different domains you learned about. Mm-hmm. So you learn about all these different things and you really find out that, hey, these correlate with these type of jobs, mm-hmm. but it's just cyber related and it's for a company and for their mm-hmm. information. Mm-hmm. For example, you have insider risk, mm-hmm. data loss prevention. Mm-hmm. You get to do a lot of the cool investigations that pretty much are high level that only like your team is going to look at or anybody with a certain level of clearance within a company mm-hmm. can see.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. You start finding out everything, the psychology of people, why would they do this and that. And
recognizing patterns and, yeah.
Like, it's all type of stuff. I could even talk about stuff, like, off camera, of like, things that people do that you would, like, kind of think, why would you do that? Not realizing, like, listen, if you're at work, everything you do is being tracked. We can see everything. You're not getting over. So it's not an if, but it's a when you get caught.
Uh-oh.
Seriously, because people think, oh, they ain't going to see it. Like, no, you just probably wasn't that important then, but they'll see it.
I think, too, I do agree with that. But having seen different types of companies, most companies are really behind in that. They got one IT guy, maybe two IT guys. They might have the stuff configured, but who's actually looking at the logs?
No. Funny enough, for whatever reason, when I was driving down here, I was thinking about my stint at JP Morgan and how we were using VDIs. And for y'all don't know what a VDI is, all that is it's like a program that'll, instead of them giving you a laptop, you get access to a VDI and you log into it from your computer and it'll let you access like all the applications you need for work from your home computer.
Yeah, virtual desktop.
Mm-hmm. But in that, they were still using Skype. Mm-hmm. You had to log on to Zoom a certain way because it didn't work good on the VDI. Mm-hmm. And like they were trying to integrate Teams. I was like, they was very behind certain things technologically. Mm-hmm. The same thing was at Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs, when I first got there, was still using Skype. I was like, in a sense, I tell a lot of people, like especially people that's coming from government, I'm like, finance ain't too far off from the government because it's very secure as well. Mm-hmm. And it paid better just because of they had these things called non-disclosed bonuses. Mm-hmm. So there are people at GS, they very lean, but they some of them probably just got a 50, 60, 70,000, probably more bonus.
That's nice.
So like everybody always think like, of course, now think about this. That's what they get. Investment bankers get way more than that. But there are some benefits if you go do work in fintech, but you're going to have to put up with a lot. So you got to pick your poison. And you got to go in the office 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought I'd throw that out there too.
I think that's my next transition. I want to get into American Express, JP Morgan, Chase.
Really? I think one of my friends, I think she is I don't want to butcher it, but I think Brene is a director at, I think it's MasterCard? I got to double check if she had MasterCard or American Express. But yeah, I still got friends at JP, Goldman Sachs. I think MasterCard, Capital One. Capital One is pretty cool too. Mm-hmm. It's got a client that got an offer from them.
Okay.
And they paid for his relocation and gave him a sign on and gave him a big bump up in pay too. And so they actually do have like some diverse people on there. It's like one of the only companies that I interview with. Mm-hmm. That had a melanated person on the panel. Well, in the sprint. Mm. So.
Okay.
And he had locks.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I like to always look at that. Every time I get to an organization, I start looking from the bottom to the top. And to see if I was to stay here X amount of years, where could my ceiling look like? Mm. So okay. Like Wayne, if I see no ceilings, I'm out. All right, so we get into the master's program and getting into cyber. So once you started liking it, what made you decide, all right, man, now I need to try to make some money and I want to work in this thing?
Yeah, honestly, I think cyber was a really good fit for my personality because I like to learn a lot. I get bored very easily, so I felt like that program was a really good fit for me. And 8 weeks, we had a different rotation in a different area. So I liked how fast paced it was. But I was like, okay, I'm in this program now and I've been out of school for a year and some change. I need some money, you know, while I'm at home too. So I started applying. My first rotation was auditing and data communications. So those classes were tied to CISA and then Network Plus. So I took those outlines into ChatGPT. I was like, this is what I'm learning in my class. Like, help me create a student resume that I could use to apply to a bunch of places. I was applying for a few weeks to just any and everything that I could. I didn't even know what the titles meant, but I was applying. And yeah, it was a few hundred applications. And I was getting callbacks.
Let me see if I remember the number you said.
600.
600.
Yeah. The pandemic was a tough time.
How'd you do that? Like, in the time span, like, what was the time frame in the 600?
I would say probably like 2 months.
And you did this without AI?
No, I used AI to create.
No, I'm talking about the applying.
Oh, applying, yeah. Well, honestly, I don't think job apps are that difficult nowadays, because a lot of the companies I was applying to, like, if they use Workday, you can use the same, like, resume format. They got a bunch of jobs, you know. So you can hit, Workday. Like...
So I'm glad you said that Workday is trash.
Workday needs to do a little better with...
I just made, like, a whole video on Workday and... People are complaining about the same thing. You put your resume in and then, like, it'll parse the first three things good.
And then everything else is...
And you got to go manually add everything. I got to make a freaking new account for every company that got Workday.
Every company, yeah. They need to pair the instances, I think.
Like, and then, so I didn't notice through my research, like, real time doing that episode last Sunday, a guy is suing Workday because he believes that they're using AI... to pretty much reject people based on, like, whatever type of workforce they already have. So, which I said, I feel like you're going to have a hard time winning that just because I think it's really hard to prove that unless you got some info that we don't have. But I was like, I've applied sometimes to jobs on work days where, like, in 5 minutes I've been rejected. I was like, ain't no way. Mm-hmm. Like Duke Dennis say, ain't no way, boy.
I'm going to have to look into that, because the thing, too, with suing companies is you don't have to be right with what you think. When you sue somebody, like, the burden is on them.
Look at you. Come ahead. Come on, Annalise.
I know. I'm gonna, I should go back to law school. I know. But if I make a bogus claim, it's on the company to prove that that's not true. So a lot of the times, like, I could have a reach. I could say such and such company is being deceitful. Doesn't matter if I'm right or wrong. They have to hand over everything to prove that they're not. So... And then now it's on your lawyer to be like, okay, yeah, we can poke holes through this.
Right. Yeah, like the judge threw out some claims, but that's the suit is still there. I need to actually follow up on it again. But that, like, that was interesting to me because I was like, we all hate Workday, but we love Greenhouse and everything else. Mm-hmm. You just throw your resume in, you apply. Like, I think about it. You're telling me to upload my resume and then making me paste the stuff I just put in the resume. Mm-hmm. Why y'all just can't read the resume? That, like, it defeats the purpose of even uploading a resume.
Yeah. Is the competition is really high. And then, too, like, they really don't have the time to, like, most, I think the stats are the recruiters spend less than 6 seconds reading your resume. And it's like, that's why they got AI and ATS systems doing everything.
Man, hey, you know what? Hey, listen, if y'all watching this right now, let's go back to the old school. Get your envelopes, resumes out. Find headquarters, say the HR department, and try your luck. See, they ain't going to deny that.
Walk inside
minutes.
And be like, I need to talk to the hiring manager right now.
Hey, if you know where a company is at, like, by all means, like, figure out somebody that worked there. Like, yo, hey, I'm finna physically bring my resume up here. Somebody gonna give me a job. You might get a job just off the street. You doing something different. Like, at this point, you got to stand out.
Yeah, that's, I'm a big advocate of that. You got to find a way to, like, it's, my mentor in high school used to always say, like, it's your job to get a job. Like, it's not going to be automatically given to you unless you have, like, a connections and nepotism and stuff like that. But it's a full-time job to find a job.
No,
and applying,
for sure.
Learning how to interview. You don't have to be right at an interview. You just have to be good at telling a story and getting people to like your personality. So, yeah, it's your job.
Or
to
if
get
they already
job.
Know they're going to hire anyway, you're just wasting your time.
Yeah. I've talked to hiring managers before who've straight up told me, like, we are hiring internally, but, you know, because of whatever HR policies, we're required to post this for 7 days and then also interview applicants. But they already know who's going
to
take
waste
the
time.
Exactly.
Or, like, I brought up how it was like, my video is pretty much like, why is finding jobs so hard? So it's like these different things, jobs you're going through. It's like one of the ones that is a killer is like, it could be in the role you interview for, and then you see it's open again.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, all right, did the person y'all hired over me, did they mess up?
Mm-hmm.
Or y'all got another position open? Like, what's up? What's good? Or
what
happened? Like, one of the things I want to know is that I was in a company I really wanted to work for, and I got to the sprint. And I'm like, I normally kill all these things, and I record, like, everything I say. And I'm like, I don't recall saying nothing that would have made them not say yes.
Mm-hmm.
This is like the easiest part because in order to get there, I was given an assessment of like a fuck. Who else? Let's keep it family friendly. I was given an assessment about like a AWS incident and I knocked that out of the park. And they saw, like, yo, we got to talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked to me. And so I'm like,
you know,
So those are those things. So I always feel my clients, I'm like, sometimes you dodge a bullet. I've had some times where I've interviewed the person for another role, a role that I initially interviewed for, and I got picked over for a person that's less qualified. It's a whole bunch of stuff. So I understand how grimy it gets and why people feel the way they do. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm just always working on my network, and I'm always connecting people. Like, I get clients, and I know people on certain teams, and I try to connect them with a person that's doing good. It's just a lot of science of getting a job. And I always say, even with helping people, I say, I just hate that getting a job is this hard.
Yeah. I think, too, right now, the landscape in the job search field is tough, because you're still dealing with all the layoffs, the massive layoffs from the pandemic. You know, all these companies are posting record profits, but somehow are laying thousands of people off because, you know, the story for another day.
Reorgs. So, some people felt was making too much, so they want to bring some other people back in.
Salary and pay adjustments. A little less. And then, too, RTO. When the government was giving out PPP loans, one of the stipulations was that they had to continue hiring. Otherwise, they had to pay the money back to the government. So a lot of companies, because policy and legal, whatever, it's a loophole. So you put out a requisition, have it out for 20 days, interview a bunch of people, and then say, I didn't find anybody that was qualified for this role, whether they were or not, objectively. That's how you get there are a lot of companies doing that. Large and small. Yep. So yeah, you don't even know. And then companies too are data farming with resumes. They're collecting, I'm getting a lot of notices about it now. I don't know what's going on, if companies are required to notify people or whatever, but I learned about this a couple months ago, but they're collecting a lot of information on people, like what your skills are, where you went to school, where you live and stuff like that. Just kind of resource pooling. See what they can find. They can tell you that, you know, we'll hold on to your resume, and if we find something that, you know, fits your skills, we'll reach back out to you. I have a friend who actually landed a job that way. But no, I've been getting a lot of notices from that.
Reminds me, while we talking about the situation in the Discord the other day, Sarah was like, hey, they was like, no disrespect to anybody who's Indian in this Discord, but yo, y'all be having any luck with the Indian recruiters?
Listen, the Indian recruiters, I don't know what it is they're looking for. At the end of the day, they're getting paid by converting people, but they got to do better.
Man, I think they be taking resumes and taking people's name off and putting other people's on it and submitting them.
You think so?
I feel like it.
Oh, yeah.
You get hit up by 3-4 Indians at one time about the same job. And they all be paying different things. You're like, huh? No. Or it's did you even read my profile? Why are you sending
me this? That's the thing. That's the thing. They cast a wide net. Some of their companies are legit. They get paid. That's a big business too. You hire somebody on, they get paid $10,000, $20,000, conversion. There's that, but when they reach out to me and they're like, I think you're really qualified, and you'll send over your resume, I'm like, did you actually you didn't read this. You just found an email list and hit send and then tried to see what you could get.
If you want to look out for recruiters you can trust, check out Ellerton Solutions. They got jobs, so you can talk to Americans to get you a job.
Talk to Americans.
I'll send you out a bill later. But back into it. So you found your first job and you applied to the job. Am I allowed to say the company since you don't work at said job anymore?
I prefer not to.
Okay, it's cool. It's cool. That's why I ask these
questions. We talk about it off camera, but yeah.
Yeah, that's why I ask these questions. Yeah. I've had times where a person that's at their current company and somebody at the current company here, and they be like, oh, you got to take that. You got to do something down with that, because people up here jealous you making more than them, which don't be their fault that they making less because y'all want to pay people what they supposed to get paid. But.
No, and for the record, I'm totally transparent about that.
I'm not worried about that. Yeah, this was just a situation with a friend of mine. Yeah. Tom, once that company laid him off and he got a new job, I instantly made that video public again. Because I feel like they need to pay me because they made me miss out on money from providing that video for about a year.
Yeah.
But so you found this needle in a haystack, or let me say, how many interviews did you do out of the 600?
I'd probably say about 10.
Okay. I think that's a good amount. Because my goal as a career coach is to just get you interviewing as quick as possible. Because the more and more interviews we get, the more comfortable you get with talking to somebody about, tell me about yourself, your day in life. Oh, are you familiar with these terms? Or if you're also interviewing for similar roles, you start getting a Rolodex of questions that you think they're going to answer. Mm-hmm. You start preparing. Oh, I didn't do good on this.
Yep.
Let me go study this. Mm-hmm. Let me go do this and that. So.
Yeah.
So it took you what? So was it interview number 10 that you finally like got it or what?
Yeah. So interestingly enough, so my last set of interviews, I interviewed at Deloitte and
They would have worked you like a dog.
Yeah. Honestly, I do. I'm like, I would love to work for Big Four. A lot of my friends from back at home, you know, got right into Big Four, making 80, 90K right out of college. And I was like, I want to work at Big Four so bad. So I thought that's what I wanted to do as well. But no, I was landing interviews with my student resume and I was always transparent. These are the tools and technologies I'm going to be learning. This is what I already know, you know, just trying to demonstrate and convey that I have the aptitude to succeed in this role. That was just my agenda. So, but every job that I've landed, at least like in the entry level period that I'm still entry level right now, but every interview that I've had where I've gotten the job was never really an interview. They just needed somebody and were selling the job to me. So I got really lucky, I think.
so that first, I like to call it the big girl job.
Yeah.
Was the, well, I saw you had it labeled as an IT analyst.
Yeah.
Is that because what it was called internally?
That's what it was called internally, yeah.
Because, like, sometimes I have people that got a job that's called something internally, but when I look at what they did, I was like, nah, you was a security analyst.
Yeah, honestly, so with that job, I was doing a lot of things. I came on to a firewall company at first, and then they branched off into a federal division, so things were moving. Like, I was on that side. I was supposed to get one, but no. When I first started off, they were training me. I was the Azure admin. I was getting the GCC instance run up and running. So that's what it was. And then eventually they trained me for their ecosystem of tools like switches. I almost said the name. Oh, switches, firewalls,
they're probably different scene
tools and all those things. So It was really fast paced. I was moving, and then towards the end of my time there, I was working on policy with the federal regulations coming out. CMMC, Cybersecurity Maturity Model, is pegged to NIST 800-171. So at the end, it's like, okay, we had you configure all these things and work with all these people, so now write the policy for it so that we could pass our assessments and things like that. So it was kind of like a startup, but yeah. So I was moving. I was doing a lot of stuff. So, but that job, like when I got that job, I cried.
I know you was like, I didn't want to cry in front of all the men, but I'm going to cry in the car.
I was, oh my gosh. Because one, I thought about like when the CTO called me and he was like, hey, you applied to this thing. And I was like, what are you talking about? Because, you know, I'm at like a few hundred applications. I don't remember. So I like literally put him on mute and I opened my email. I was like, what was this position? And I was like, oh, okay. And then he just asked me like simple questions about how the internet works. What are the protocols involved in a Google search or just whatever. So I'm like, all right, cool. I got lucky because in my master's program, my first class was data communication. So okay, I was like TCP/IP model and OSI model. So I'm talking about these different protocols. I'm like, yeah, something about DNS. I was just like brain dumping, and he was like, okay, yeah, cool. All right, we'll get back to you. And he called me back the next day and he was like, all right, yeah, we're going to give you the job. This is what we're going to pay you. And I was like, no. I was like, what? Considering the listing was like, it said 10 years of experience, man. I was just like, there's no way. And that's when I really learned. I was like, okay. Because I had seen on TikTok, people were always like, women don't apply to jobs because they feel like they're not qualified, but men kind of, they do whatever, right? So I was like, oh my gosh, this is really, like, you should still apply even if you don't meet the qualifications. And so I was just like, and he knew too. I told him, I was like, you know, I don't know nothing yet, right? And he's like, it's fine, we'll train you.
Yeah, it's just like the thing you just said is also the same thing why some women are underpaid because they don't negotiate their salary.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of scared to.
Yeah, we're scared to because, you know, I think we're just more docile. We're not that aggressive when it comes to things. So it's like we take what we can get. So, yeah.
Yeah, like I have, like when I do help, like it's like helping you. It's like I know like one of my friends, my birthday twin, we did an episode. She was doing something. She started getting the market for another job. And she stayed in Cali. And she told me what she was getting paid. I was like, I mean, what she was getting paid. I was like, oh, no.
Oh, no.
We finna run that up. And then she ended up getting some offers. And we ended up was able to get her, like, pretty much a job that doubled her salary. I think she went from, like, making 75 to, like, at the time, 150-something with, like, mm-hmm. a sign-on some other stuff.
Damn.
So I was like, nah, we gon'. You got skills. We need to apply this. So I also tell people too, sometimes, like you said, you'll have people, like I have people all the time when I'm talking about these jobs you can get in cyber, IT, paying the 80s, 90s. How would I get an 80,000 job? Apply to it.
They got the money.
Yeah, because a lot of times I'll tell them, I'll preface and say, hey, you ain't going to like my comments. It's going to sound a little blunt, but apply to the job.
Yeah, just do it. You don't know, like, one thing, don't tell yourself no before other people tell you no. That's the biggest thing. But through my time at the company, one, I learned I was making a lot for my age, I feel like, but I was the least paid person there because as we were hiring
I heard you
more,
say the range that they had.
Mm-hmm, the range on that, yes. And the so range was huge. I was like, you know what? This is my first job and they know I don't know anything. So I'm not going to negotiate this one. I'm going to take this job and I'm going to do it. So yeah, but yeah, as we started expanding more and more, I realized because when I first started, it was like 30 people in our division, and by the time I left, we were almost at 80. So I had onboarded a lot of people, and I knew what they were making. I was like, damn, I really sold myself short. But again, I wasn't gonna be too aggressive with that. I was just like, I the mental state I was in, one, in the pandemic, coming out of it, and being so depressed, like studying for that LSAT was just, I was a zombie.
And this was so, remote, right? This role was remote at the time?
It was hybrid. We were only going in one day a week.
I like I said, I like technically I'm remote, but at my job, we get like a flex day every week. So one day we work half a day, whether you can pick the first part of your day or the last part. So on those days, a lot of times I'll go work in a co-working space.
Okay, yeah. I love doing that. Yeah. We didn't really have a working policy. I mean, we had an office. You can go in if you wanted to. You didn't have to. But I liked going in because I was working with a bunch of network engineers. And so the information I was soaking in from them, like, and that's one thing about me is like, even though I make content, like I struggle a lot with social anxiety. So if I'm in a room with people, I like to sit and observe and like learn from them. Mm-hmm. That's what I was doing. I was asking them a million questions, like whatever stuff I would like read in my textbooks or like different projects I would do in my master's. I go ask them. Like, I literally would ask them for help. Like my manager, I told him one time I had a project where I had to configure a VM. I think it was in my machine learning class. I don't remember. It was like 2 years ago. But I literally went to my manager and I was like, can you help me? What am I doing? He's like, okay, well, you have to find an image. Different operating systems have different vulnerabilities. Like, you know, pick that. He's like, the older, the better. And I was like, oh, you're right. I did read that, you know? So
he was connecting the dots for you. Mm-hmm. That's what we was talking about earlier.
He was helping me. So, man, I was so thankful for that. Like, that team was amazing. And if they ever want me back, I will happily run back to them. Like,
spin the block queen.
I will go. No, it was honestly the best work environment. There's no animosity with anything.
Yeah. So I know you mentioned some of the stuff you were doing. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about like some other tools at a high level that you learned? And like, also like what was like a day-to-day like in a IT analyst world? You probably made a TikTok on this, but TikTok does not have a good search feature within profiles, and I hate that.
No. I can sum it up because it really changed a lot. Working a lot in the Azure portal, going through their certifications. Can't really say. I mean,
no. Just say something like, if you do a layman's term, they so you don't be. I'm getting tongue tied now. Specific.
Yeah. It was a lot of training. Getting to learn Microsoft tools as a whole, mm-hmm. Configuring Sentinel, PAM. What else? Other tools.
So you have Identity and access management experience.
Mm-hmm. Look at you. I mean, you had to do. We were a small shop, and we were trying to. I don't know. Are you familiar with CMMC at all?
I've seen it on job descriptions.
So, NIST 800-171 is a requirement for federal contractors to have like 110 controls in place. So when you have like there's normal Azure that companies have or Microsoft tools, and then there's GCC High. So you have to configure everything like to the max, and have a record, maintain a record, review it, and all those things. So there's a lot of stuff involved there. And working with the network engineers, like all those guys, they hop from like Cisco, Palo Alto, Juniper, AWS, like a lot of stuff. So, I was learning a lot from them too in office. And then also, I got to rack some of our Dell servers and, you know, our server room. And I learned a lot about network topology. Like it's just a lot of soaking in information. And then sitting in with MSP, some of the things that we started to delineate out to other companies, and then having to come in super early for like installation of like equipment and things like that before the workday started. So I was flowing around. I was doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah, so you're kind of like, in a sense, and the reason why I always like to harken back to other episodes. So yeah. Your role kind of was like a generalist in a sense that you were learning all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big proponent of people doing roles like that, because then you can start kind of figuring out, okay, out of this role, what did I really like that I did the most?
Mm-hmm.
How do I go specialize in that? And they'll pay me more for specialization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, even then that kind of like, that made things worse for me, like leaving that company, because I still didn't know what I wanted to do. But they required me to train for a lot of things, even their own ecosystem. So learning how to configure the switches, learning how to configure the firewalls on the GUI and everything. So learning a little bit of everything, and then coupled with the master's program, I honestly was like, well, I still don't know what I want to do now, because it was a rotational program. And then I was also rotating at work. It's a lot of stuff. Even now, I really don't know what I want to do. There are things that I thought I wanted to do, like specializing going in. But then now I'm also in a position where like I have a job with the current skills that I learned from my past. So, right. Yeah.
I thought about Chris in here. He might know the joke, but I had thought about a Naruto joke when you were talking about all that rotating.
What's the joke?
There's this person in Naruto named Neji, and he got this thing called rotation.
Rotation. Yeah.
So I thought about rotation. I thought my intrusive thoughts almost made me just say rotation as she was talking. I was like, I'm not going to see it.
No. I like anime. I need to rewatch Naruto. I watched it when I was younger, but.
Everybody's been getting mad because I said, you can watch anime and not have to ever watch Attack on Titan and be okay. And people got mad at me for saying that. I don't think it's bad. I think it's probably pretty good, but I also don't really care that. If I don't ever finish it, it won't bother me at all.
That's what scares me, is that all the ones that everyone's like, you need to watch this. This is good. It has like 500, 1,000 episodes. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
I want to sit there, but I love anime.
They did a remake of Rurouni Kenshin. That's pretty good. Okay. Solid and straight to the point.
Right then.
But, so.
Yeah.
Like most of us, you did suffer your first heartbreak in corporate.
Mm-hmm.
You were laid off.
Mm-hmm.
Did they bring you in and say, like, you know, Riri Oregon and yada, yada, yada?
Yes and no. So honestly, like, that was a really heartbreaking experience, not because of me like losing my job, but it's the way they went about it. Cause I had really felt at family, like family at that company. And I loved everybody and everybody loved me. So when, like, the way that the call was set up with like HR and my manager, it was very cold hearted. It was like, yeah, this is what we got to do. At the end of this call, you're being, your access is shut off. We'll email you about your severance package. I was like, oh. So that's really what the call was. It wasn't until like I was negotiating back and forth with them that they gave me like more information. But HR at the end of the day has to protect the company. So I realized like they couldn't tell me too much to not give me like a case or anything, but it was really.
But if they don't, like, for example, I got laid off from my first security job too at McAfee, and they just said they was reorging and all this yada yada yada. Mm-hmm. So they laid me off, and I was mad too because I was like, mm-hmm. I'm one of the best people y'all got. I'm actually mm-hmm. in there trying to make stuff better because this is trash. Mm-hmm. And I got laid off, and it kind of showed me really how to navigate corporate mm-hmm. after that. But if they don't give you a reason and then they won't tell you the reason, you're like, what's the cause for pause? Let me see. Am I the only person getting laid off?
Yeah. So honestly, that was really devastating because talking with them, like they didn't tell me much in the call, but I was asking a lot of questions afterwards with HR. Like I was calling HR every day, like trying to negotiate and stuff. So one of the reasons I was like really, really upset, I was like trying not to be emotional about it. And, you know, my friends and family kept telling me like I needed to go talk to an attorney about it because something was like off. But I was like, I don't want to do that. Honestly, I'm going to just peacefully walk away. But I'd say 6 months before they let me go, they started training me for the CMMC compliance and like getting me certified. So they paid, like, they invested thousands of dollars for me to move into that role. And that's what they told me. They said I would be moving out of the sysadmin work and be transitioning into compliance. So I was like, okay, cool. And we started hiring on, like, a few people, like, big people in the CMMC world, right, to come onto the company. I was working more closely with them. And they even... They literally had me go find my replacement, which is crazy. So I was interviewing a few MSPs to see like how they operate and like how they could integrate into our systems and keep us compliant. And I was told that I was going to be managing that pretty much. So interviewed a bunch, onboarded a few, had a lot of meetings with them. I was literally handing over the keys to them, writing the policy, the documentation, gathering all the evidence, literally giving them everything that I was working on. Like, and then shortly after I passed my certification, like literally the month after, they were like, you know, they had that call with me, you know, random HR meeting on your calendar. Boom, you're let go. And afterwards, it was like, yeah, you know, we had a board meeting. We have too much headcount. You had to go. I was like, wow. So y'all really had me find my replacement, train my replacement. Yeah. You guys spent thousands of dollars telling me you're going to transition me into another role and then cut me because now we have too many people at the company, which was weird. Something about it wasn't right to me because I was very involved with, you know, we were a small shop. So I knew a lot of stuff going on. And I was like, the math is not mathing here, but I'm not going to argue. It's okay.
Yeah. I think you were what we would call green in that situation.
Yeah.
And don't feel bad. Everybody's green at one point in their career just because of you start. Like, now you're like, this person's supposed to know a lot of stuff. Why I'm training them from scratch or why I'm doing all this work?
Yeah.
Like, if it gets to that point, I'm going to drag out everything I do. So Yeah. If it's supposed to take me a week to do it, I might make it be a week and a half, mm-hmm. 2 weeks. I'm like, nah, fam. Mm-hmm. You finna drag this out till you really get these deliverables mm-hmm. or whatever. This is what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. But it's funny that you said training your replacement, because I want to say that one time that stream that Chris came on, my friend William was on there talking about he had to train his replacement mm-hmm. for one of his jobs, and the stuff happened to him. So it's like, they be doing some shiesty stuff. That's why I'll be telling people, hey, run the bag up. Because, like, at the end of the day, when your time is up, it's going to be up. Mm-hmm. So I tell people, hopefully, you know, the company, I hate the companies that let you go. And it's like, it's not like you've been doing bad work or anything like that. And then they'll say, well, this is the only severance you're getting, is up for non-negotiation. And mm-hmm. not realizing, hey, it's kind of tough out here finding a job. You really mm-hmm. finna try to pay me with an extra check like this a severance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really like... I know, I mean, I was young and naive. Green is an appropriate term. I'm still young and naive about a lot of things, but I really, something, like, my intuition was telling me something wasn't right, because, like, towards the end of it, I felt like I was being more excluded out of things. Like, mm-hmm. I was having to come to my manager and be like, hey, like, you didn't put me on this meeting, or, like, what's going on, right? But, like, in the beginning, I was like, why would they, you know, they're spending all this money on me to transition me into, like, have the right certifications for what I'm supposed to be moved to. So it was just kind of like, okay, what's going on here? So I didn't really think I was going to be let go, but thinking back on it, the signs were there, I guess. Yeah,
they were trying to finish you. But, you know, you got laid off and then you bounced back. How long was your layoff?
I didn't find another role. So that was May of last year, like last week of May of last year, May 22nd. And then I started my new job October 15th.
Okay. So you had a little break. That ain't too bad.
It was bad.
About 5 months.
It was bad.
That's about the same time for
rejection left and right there, man. I honestly thought it was going to be a lot worse though, because of all the layoffs that were going on in general. Like... You know, so because the thing with layoffs is like a layoff here and there is okay, but when companies are significantly downsizing, so you're competing with people that have years and years of experience at a senior level that are okay with taking pay cuts because they have bills that don't care about what, you know, they have to take whatever they can get. They're overqualified.
Well, most of them, if you want me to be totally honest, most of them not even senior level no more. Mm-hmm. They might have been senior level at a time. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times you get to work and you with these people that's been here 5, 10, like, bro, why are you still here? You don't know nothing.
Yeah.
So, like, senior level entitled, but in skill set, they are no longer there.
Yeah.
They're like a... Mm-hmm.
It's different. It's
a
relative.
A basketball player is supposed to hang them up.
Yeah, it's all relative. But yeah, the job market was tough. You competing with those people. You're competing with people that already have jobs, that hate their jobs, want new jobs. And you're competing. I mean, I'm entry level competing. All the resources that I post online for people, I'm also competing with them too. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So you got all that pressure and trying to find like an entry level, mid level position. It's hard. It was hard. So I was like, man, I'm not going to find nothing for at least a year. But luckily it was a lot shorter than that. But, you know, it was kind of like it was a blessing in disguise, because if I did not have that certification that my company had paid for, I would not be in the position I'm in right now. Because I'm at the point now with like the rulemaking went in effect in December. So it's like recruiters left and right are like, just DMing you on what's it called?
LinkedIn,
talking about, this is what we're paying you. Can you come? Like, that's what the landscape is right now in CMMC. So I was like, you know what? You guys laid me off. I really loved working there. However, thank you.
So can somebody get CMMC certified without the thousands of dollars?
No. It's bureaucracy involved. NIST is free. All the requirements, all the controls, learning, like you can go online right now to the DoD CIO website and learn everything you're going to be tested on. The PDFs are there for you for free, but you have to apply with the Cyber AB, which is the accrediting body. Mm-hmm. And to get certified, you have to go to a training provider. and essentially the training provider, you sit there and they read through everything that's already listed for free on the website. That's where you got to pay $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, okay, to then be eligible to take the exam.
That reminds me of like when you get the CISSP, you got to get a CISSP person to endorse you.
And yep. Yeah. So it's like, but no, if anybody wants to get into GRC on the federal contracting side, you can get a head start, right? Whenever you come up with the money, you come up with the money. That way, when you're done with your class, you're ready to take the exam right then and there. But the information is literally free.
You just got to pay the transaction.
You got to pay a company. Exactly.
Then you got to pay the price.
So that's what sucks. Bureaucracy. And yeah, it's.
So I think your current role is like more of like a compliance role, right?
Consulting. Both. Just based off of who I work for right now. So we mostly consult companies. There's a bottleneck. Who are looking to be certified in CMMC. But because even though it's been around for 7 years, the government put their foot down in December about it. So now they're like, okay, we gotta ramp up. But they're nowhere near ready to be assessed and certified. So there's a lot of like, you're spending a few months just talking to them, like literally asking them, like, show us your entire environment, what's going on. And then you fill in the gaps and then get them ready for assessments. So it's a lot of consulting right now.
Okay. No, it's cool. I mean, so you say your days probably feel like more meetings, if about anything.
Meetings. Right now it's just a lot of like investigating. So I do CMMC and I also do FedRAMP, which is getting cloud service offerings ready for federal use. So, it's just a lot of investigating how they have their IT set up. And it's actually taught me, I would say where I work right now is the intersection between like being technical and non-technical, because to do this kind of work, like you have to understand, like if I didn't have the previous experience at the firewall company to know what I'm looking at, I wouldn't survive. Like it's not one of those where you can just read a bunch of definitions mm-hmm. and then be in compliance. Like, so, yeah, especially with FedRAMP, like, there's pen testing involved. Like, I didn't know you could pen test in GRC, right? Because I've, like, and that's why I do what I do, because you don't know, like, nobody tells you these things.
It's all a part, like, everybody make it seem like it's a silo, but everything really works together.
It's a big blend of things. Like, and even, like, understanding their networks, their interfaces, and, like, you have to have the technical aptitude, like regardless. I get it. If you don't want to code, you don't want to be a cyber engineer creating custom solutions, that's cool. But if you're getting into GRC and you think it's going to be easy, no, it's not. If anything,
I did some GRC work a little bit in the finance space, and mm-hmm. you had to be technical there.
Like yeah.
We were talking about, in that specific role, we were dealing with firewall rule mm-hmm. violations. And mm-hmm. that's when I got talking about control gaps. And mm-hmm. we were dealing with the everybody server tool Archer. Mm-hmm. So that's when I learned some of them like GRC tools. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Learning SQL and just some other stuff that people don't think about. Digging into spreadsheets, making pivot tables, mm-hmm. presenting, talking. Stuff that I had been doing with content, which is why I don't find any job that requires me to do all that stuff mm-hmm. hard, because I already do it anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's why I always tell people, look into like their skill sets when they think about trying to get into cyber, what you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got to do the work. Like a lot of cloud tools, like you have a free trial at least. So try to poke around and see what you can do on your own and then go through. Like Microsoft makes everything free. Like AWS is doing that too. So
yeah,
you got to.
That's why I prefer like Microsoft, because you can use Sentinel for free. Mm hmm. You can use Defender. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if you can use Purview for free. I got to check that out. Mm-hmm. But shoot, you get with somebody. See, the secret sauce is you find somebody who can help you figure out what you're supposed to do with those platforms. Mm-hmm. And that's how you can 10X mm-hmm. your growth at a faster rate versus crashing that on your own.
Exactly. No, I fully agree with that. And it really helps. I mean, I think no matter where you end up in, because honestly, like when I get on calls with companies now and I'm walking through like their controls, their compliance, because they don't, the NIST is like really long and it has all these big chunky terms and stuff. And they're like, I don't really know what type of evidence you're asking for. I'm like, all right, pull up AD and I can tell you where to find the configuration. Like, show me your Kerberos configuration, because I've done that.
Look at
before.
You. Hold on. Wait a minute. These people don't know what control or Kerberos is. Sorry. One start with a C and the other one start with a K.
Sorry. No, I'm just saying in general, like, because of my experience from my previous company, I'm able to fit more easily into this compliance consulting role, because when I'm asking companies for evidence that fits the controls, I had experience implementing those before. So I could say, okay, this is where you can go into GCC High and find this, because I did it. Right. This is where you can find this in AD, because I did it. Or if you're trying to show me your time source, go in the CLI. This is how you do it. Like, you know, that's just because I have that experience. Yeah.
But a control is what?
A control? They're split into... like CMMC specifically is split into 14 families. So you got access control, you got personnel security, you got media protection. So access control is like the who, what, when, where, why, and how are you letting people in to like access CUI, controlled unclassified information, pretty much anything on a federal contract. So that involves like, that's the physical space, logical access, like on the network, so like, things like that.
So the controls would be like passwords, MFA, smart cards, all that type of
stuff. Yeah. Auditing, change control boards and things like that. So it's more about like how you're preventing or not allowing something.
Yeah, that's Yeah. That's all that different stuff, because like you said, like I got a homie, he just moved from here and he's working in Colorado Springs with his company. And they bet they're using like smart cards and working on them controls and trying to integrate all this other cool stuff that some of the stuff he did when he was working for Lockheed. So,
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He'd be well versed in that. Yeah. Because Lockheed has to meet all of that, like all the big contractors have to meet CMMC. Are they? I mean,
well, depending on what project going, but from most part, like, they cheat. But now, let's get into the fun stuff. TikTok.
Yeah. TikTok.
So what inspired you, I guess, on TikTok? Was it watching all of your faves already being on TikTok? And like, you know what? I'm going to start this thing, too.
Yeah. So I knew I was moving to Atlanta, like, a year before I moved to Atlanta. So I was really just studying. Like, I'm a studier. I like to observe. I like to see what works, what doesn't work. So I was literally collecting like a bunch of ideas of like, okay, when I move to Atlanta, I'm just going to document everything that's new. Like how I'm decorating my apartment, what it's like working corporate, all of these things, right? So I was making fun videos. I started in August. That's when I moved, August 2023. So I was just making fun videos. I'm like, I'm exploring Atlanta. This is what I'm doing. Yada, yada, yada. And then, yeah, I was just doing lifestyle stuff.
Cool. But how did you, like, for see, I think my thing is, like, I've never decided, like, even, like, yesterday I made a video just, like, giving my reaction to, like, the new Drake and Party Next Door album. I've never really just made TikTok content. Like, I know fully how to do it. Hey, if I get on the app, if I do these things, if I do the fake little laugh every couple 30 seconds, my video is going to pop.
Yeah.
Because, like, whatever it is, everybody got the same thing. They do this little hand thing, they laugh, whatever. You just got to hook the people in the first, like, second or whatever, and you're good. But I never really just go into that, because a lot of my stuff is stemming from long form content that I just cut up. And occasionally those will do well, but they're not necessarily always made on TikTok. But for you, you were able to get your following up. You've got brand deals. You've gotten to, you know, rub shoulders with the who's who. Like, how has that been?
Honestly, it's been a blessing. It's been good. I think I started transitioning into cyber content, because I'm really good at recognizing trends and seeing what works and what doesn't. And I feel like that's how my page grew, because I don't post lifestyle stuff as much anymore. 'Cause that type of growth is a lot slower. And at the time, a lot of people were trying to do that too. They're like, oh, I want to be like such and such. And so
come with me.
And, yeah, come with me. Let's spend a day at the, you know, so your little like influencer. I'll walk back to
my little coffee spot and I get my ice macchiato. Yeah.
And that stuff, like, I think a lot of people were missing was that you have to be known for something first. You have to have, people have to know your personality before they want to know more about your life. So if you're a random person talking about let's go shopping together, nobody knows who you are. So it's like, who's going to watch that, right? Like, it's not going to work as easily. So when I started posting cyber content, I did a breakdown of like my sign-on bonus and how I was spending it. And then that's when people are like, what do you do? What do you do? What do you do? And then that's how my page turned into a cybersecurity page. So, yeah. And then, so it was like, okay, what do you do? All right, this is what I do. And then it was like, how did you get into that? This is, you know, I got into a master's program. I stumbled upon it. Okay, how much did that cost? What did you make at your first job with it? So when people are like commenting, they're literally giving you content ideas. You got to take that and run with it. And then kind of how like you and I are having a conversation like this, like normally, right? On TikTok, it's different. Like you were talking about attention cues. So one is your energy. Those first 3 seconds when people are looking at your videos, if I'm talking to you like this, I'm making a TikTok, hey guys, you should go study for Security Plus. That's not going to work. But I have a really good certification that I think is going to help you get into a job. You know, it's that energy that, and that's what I do. Like yeah. When you look at my videos, I'm trying to get you to stop scrolling. And then attention span. Like people really only want to hear like how long something's going to take, how much money it's going to cost, and how much money they can make. That's like yeah. my formula. So I'm like, okay, this certification can help you land this job in this pay range, and this how long it's going to take you to do it. Like that's, and so I kept doing that. And then, yeah, that's how I grew my page. Yeah. So you just listening to the people. That's it.
Yeah. And you forgot one thing. Did you ever go live a lot? Or you didn't go live?
I went live a few times. I don't like going live. Well, I like going live, but when I'm like in the zone, I yap too much. So when I do go live, it'll be like 2 hours and I'm like, I gotta go. Like,
see, I need to go live on there just a little bit so I can get that RTMP thing so mm-hmm. I can throw it in the stream yard. Therefore, now I can stream to YouTube, Twitter, mm-hmm. and TikTok at the same time. That's literally the only thing I need, and that's the way I would go live versus
okay, on the phone. I didn't know that. Yes. That would be
my game always been the long game because it's just, it's not. It is harder for YouTube, but it's also different.
Yeah.
Because you can do, it's better at evergreen content. Mm-hmm. It's better at building more community mm-hmm. than TikTok.
Yeah, that's what I'm learning now that I'm in YouTube. The algorithm is different. Mm-hmm. You got to find ways to keep people engaged for longer. And so I realized, like, it's not the same for me. You got to adapt. And it's hard to do.
Yeah, I mean, but as long as the content is good, it doesn't matter. Like, mm-hmm. one of my best performing videos is me doing a, which one is it? I did like this day in the life of a sock analyst video for the mm-hmm. cyber club out here in the University of Dallas. Mm-hmm. And all I'm doing is reading from a presentation and taking questions and answers. Mm-hmm. Over 100,000 some views. Like, so it really just depends on the content, how good is it, what value are they getting out of content. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what'll stand the test of time on YouTube mm-hmm. versus that. Or you can pivot, which I'm thinking about doing a separate channel where I could just react to current things that are happening because it's easy money.
Mm-hmm.
People just mm-hmm. react to like all hop different on type a band. Of stuff.
Yep.
Like think about it, reacting to like, and they might do that one time for a live stream. Hey y'all, let's react to Papa the Balloon because I think they did the Papa Balloon tech version. Like
I love Papa.
I may do that. You thought about going on there just for fun?
I love, yeah. Oh my gosh. Like when it first came out, I like was filling out like 2 forms and I was like, I want to go on there so bad because this is just so crazy. You think
you would want
to
go on there and then like kind of with your brand now and like open yourself up with that level of scrutiny? You think you would?
Yeah. I think like if I go on Pop the Balloon, it would be to create exposure. Because right now I am branching out into consulting and helping people like get into cybersecurity. So if I do go on there,
but think about like I guess like something like that. It's the widespread of it so spread. Like what if like you doing a consulting call at work, mm-hmm. and somebody like,
is that?
Hey, sideboard, did I see you on Pop the Balloon?
No. See, the thing is, the space that I currently work in right now, my colleagues, they're not seeing none of that. I'm working with, like...
You never say never. I ain't gonna... Like, I'll tell you, I've lied about, like, some funny stuff. Real quick. Biggest cybersecurity or social media, like, pet peeve? Mm-hmm. Or what's... No. What's a hot take? What's your hot take?
About social media?
Cybersecurity.
Oh, about cybersecurity? Oh, boy. My pet peeve about cybersecurity?
For example, like, you know, he's seen me go in on people all the time, like, get in cybersecurity in 45 days, mm-hmm. Get two remote jobs, like, mm-hmm. promising people stuff that you can't necessarily guarantee they're going to get. Mm-hmm. But because people know they'll make, hopefully, good money in it, mm-hmm. you can tug on their emotions to get them to shell out cash.
Yeah.
Or pretty much use the MLM handbook.
Yeah.
Like, I ain't seen, matter of fact, I hadn't seen... I haven't seen an advertisement from Mr. What's his name? Anyway, he pretty much told somebody he went from being a cab driver to being a pen tester, mm-hmm. but in the interview never said anything he pen tested.
Oh, okay.
And so I was like, yeah.
Okay,
your short day's gonna be over. That's another thing I would also say too, with YouTube, the how-to stuff still works. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people have gotten so much over the last 4 years, all the how to make six figures and this mm-hmm. and that. It don't really do as well as it used to.
Yeah, I would say it was very popular back when people were struggling more. I mean, coming out of the pandemic, you know, the things were a lot crazy. Crazier, I would say. So, yeah, that kind of marketing of like, all right, six figures in 60 days type of stuff, that doesn't work anymore. My hot take would be, and I talk to Chris about this all the time, I don't believe in absolutes. Because when I started making content, I got a lot of slack from like old heads about my experience, my journey. They were telling me I was lying. I was like, it's my offer letter. Like I was literally posting all of that stuff. Like I have no reason to come on here and lie to you. But I do think it's important for people to be realistic. My experience, like 8 weeks into cybersecurity mm-hmm. and landing a six-figure job is like, I'm a unicorn. Like, please remember I'm a unicorn. That can happen for you. It's not likely though. But I mean, we were talking to somebody the other day. We were helping somebody and Chris, if you want this cut out, we can cut out. I won't name any names, but we helped a lady get a six-figure job. She got 2 six-figure job offers with no experience in cybersecurity. Like, because she learned how to interview. And one, she wasn't applying to just, I think that's a thing too. Like, everybody trying to get in is like only applying to SOC analyst roles. A SOC analyst level one drops and it's like 500 applicants in 30 minutes. Stay away from those jobs. You got to apply to like the small companies. They got the money. The ones that are not hitting like the SEO on LinkedIn or just Google, the low key companies.
Yeah, you can filter out for under 10 applicants and stuff like that.
Under 10 applicants are just like really, really small, like companies I've never even heard of. Like when I was talking to this girl, I was like, what? Like if I told you that, we can talk about this off camera, but.
We'll talk. No. Well, I'm glad you said that because I've had, like, think about it. I've had a guy, well, I have a client and I helped him twice.
Yeah.
And then the first time working with me, the next week he landed his first security job. Mm-hmm. And then right after that, we helped him get another one. He's working currently for, I think, Paramount. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've helped people, like I had another client. Mm-hmm. I helped him get like land like two roles. Mm-hmm. Like I got the sheet. I'll show y'all the sheet of some of the salary
that things that
I've increased for people. But I don't tell people, hey, come work with me and I'll get you in cybersecurity in a week. Because
don't guarantee anything, right?
I just can guarantee you're going to get some interviews. Yeah. I say it's going to be up to you to get better. It's up to you to keep on studying your skill set and applying pressure. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, if you want to work with me, bother me. Because I'm like, hey, if you bother me, you're trying to get it. I said, the people who give me, hey, I worked on this. They're going to eventually land something because they are dedicated. They pay.
Consistent. Yeah.
What Myron Golden say, he says, some people who pay, they pay attention. Mm-hmm. Those who paid a lot of money pay a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. So if somebody pays me for a service and you feel like you paid a lot of money to me, mm-hmm. you're going to pay a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I'll tell people to pay a lot of attention to what you're doing.
I was talking to another cyber creator who got into like consulting with his audience too. And I was asking him, I was like, how are you like helping me? Because my whole thing is like low cost free resources, right? That's my whole brand. That's what I post about. It's like, how can you do something with the least amount of money? So I feel guilty charging people. Like, but he told me, he was like, I was giving out stuff for free all the time and nobody was listening. When I started charging money, I think people need like,
they need to feel like they care about it.
Yeah. I've you put your charged. Money on the line, you're going to, you might not like it, but you're going to follow through with it because that's your money. Like there's some type of emotional tie with that.
Sure.
So,
yeah. Like Chris, like I'm charging more so for my time. So times I'm talking to you, I could have taken my little girl to the playground or we could have went to the movies or something. So you're paying for my time. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing that I charge for when in my exclusive coaching, you're charging for my exclusive time. Hey, you want to do a meeting today? Okay, cool. That's what you're paying for. All the other stuff that you get access to, I've made that a long time ago. I add to it. I make that on my own time and you can just access it. But other than that, time is money. I can't get it back.
Time is money. And yeah, that's your connection to it. And also that's an investment for them too. Because I look at it as like with me consulting with my audience, I'm entry level, but I'm giving you the shortcut. Like, okay, if you don't got the money to go to school, but I'll give you everything that I learned. These are all the tools that I got access to for free in school. Like, if you want projects, I'll tell you the projects that I did. So you're also paying me for a shortcut, right? I'm giving you everything I learned in a year and a half, like in a short time span. So yeah, like it's an investment for everybody.
Right. And if you are still watching right now, and you've probably seen the integration for this in the earlier part of the episode, check out SNHU, the cybersecurity program, in the link be in the description. No, for real, I posted about it and I had people on my LinkedIn and they were actually like, yo, I like this program, I'm actually in it now. It's been helping me. I could do this, this, and this. So like, I think I sent it out again, like in my Discord with actual like screenshots of people that say and using it. Cause for me, I don't like to like partner with stuff that I don't feel like it helped my audience.
Yeah.
So if I don't feel like it helped you, I'd rather like, I'm good. So there have been some things in the past where I stood a chance to make a lot of money if I really wanted to push it. But because when I could never see any like a lot of proof of concepts or get a lot of people who've used it, I didn't like to push it. So that's kind of always been my standpoint on pushing certain affiliate things. But having said all that, Fanta Marie, where can they follow you at?
So it's Fanta Marie T. That's my username on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Yeah, you just pretty much Google my name. You'll find it. And then if anyone is interested in any digital downloads or consulting, fantamarie.shop is where you can find all that other stuff. So, yeah.
Perfect. I'll have all those links in the description. And I appreciate y'all for rocking with us. But until next time, let's stay textual and we out. Peace.